What's going on, guys? It's Ramon R.L. Malpica here with a special edition bonus podcast that I like to call a feature I like to call The Mind of Malpica, where, I'll from time to time drop just some thoughts on things going on in the world of sports and in the world in general. As Fight Heads has gone from the live platform to the podcast platform, it gives us more opportunities to drop podcasts like this. And I'm sure you'll get some from Sean as well. But I just got to get on here. A lot of things I want to talk about. First and foremost, we got the official announcement of the venue for Canelo versus Triple G2, which I'm starting to get really excited about. A couple months ago, which was a few months removed from the fight, I wasn't too excited. Maybe it's because I just felt so strongly about how Triple G won that first fight. And unfortunately, he didn't get the decision. And for those who didn't see the fight, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm almost positive you did see the fight. But those who didn't, you know, it was a very controversial draw. Most fight heads and fight pugilists would agree that Gennady Triple G Golovkin won that fight, won the majority of the rounds in that fight, and also won the rounds that he won the most handily. But now we sit here getting ready for the rematch. And when I say getting ready, I'm talking about we still got, 2 months to go. But we know how time flies, man. And, they're taking it back to Vegas, which to me, it is what it is. I understand the allure of Vegas. Vegas is most likely going to win out, in any type of bidding war in America. But it's kind of disappointing. I mean, the thought of this fight, a fight of this magnitude happening in, say, a Madison Square Garden, I think would have been fantastic. I mean, Golovkin has a nasty following in the Northeast, so that would be kind of cool. And I'm not even sure. I'm not 100% sure if Canelo's ever fought in Madison Square Garden. So for Golden Boy, who obviously considers Canelo Alvarez its number one cash cow, pretty much the face of the franchise, I think it would have done them well to take him to the East Coast like that. But it is what it is. It's gonna happen in Vegas, and I'm not even being biased because I'm in Texas, and I didn't even bring up Dallas, which I thought would have been cool. But I understand the game. And I just thought it would have been cool if it would have happened in Madison Square Garden. But most of us knew it was going to happen in Vegas at T-Mobile Arena. And from what I've heard from people, I haven't been to T-Mobile yet. I've seen it, have not been there, have not watched a fight there. From what I hear, the sight lines aren't that great, which kind of sucks because MGM Grand is kind of getting the shaft now once this new T-Mobile was built. And MGM had amazing sight lines. So I still hope some big fights happen in MGM, and I'm sure they will. But the fight itself, it's really going to come down to one thing, and that is, what does Golovkin have left? He fought so hard, and I don't mean that figuratively, but he worked so hard to put himself in position to get a big fight like the Canelo fight in September this past year. And he was looking forward to that fight so much, and he had been burned for over a year, a number of the best fighters in the world kind of shying away from fighting him. And he gets the biggest fighter in the world, finally his opportunity, and he for all intents and purposes wins the fight, just doesn't get the decision. That's got to wear on somebody, man. And that's a concern to me. From a skill level, if Golovkin comes in at his best and Canelo comes in at his best, and you throw all the other stuff, all the ancillary miscellaneous X factors out, Triple G should be able to do what he did in the first fight, maybe even more. And he should win that fight, but we all know that when it comes to the fight game and you step inside the squared circle, that that's not what happens. Things happen inside that ring, you know? You know, not to use one of the most overly used quotes in the world from Mike Tyson, but everyone has a game plan till they get hit. You know what I mean? And whatever game plan that Golovkin's coming up with, or Canelo, it's going to have to be altered. These guys are going to have multiple plans because, you know, there's two sides to every story. And the biggest story, the biggest narrative that's getting pushed right now is that Canelo figured him out, and based on those last three rounds of the first fight, and he's just going to do more of that in this fight, and he's going to win, right? Okay, and look, it's an easy narrative. I understand it. I completely understand it. But let's step back a little bit, you know what I mean? And let's really get analytical about this thing, about this fight, all right? You add Golovkin basically dominate the majority of the fight from, let's say when I say domination, I'm talking like literally clear, handily winning rounds 4 through 9.5, 10. Okay. I mean, you can't dispute who won those rounds, in my opinion. Right. A couple of other ones are a little shaky. Right. So you had Canelo a lot more passive in this fight, looking for his opportunities to counter off the ropes, and didn't really put in a lot of work in those middle rounds. Almost, and this is something a lot of people don't talk about. Like, what has been Canelo's biggest Achilles heel? It's his stamina, right? It's his stamina. So, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, I think Canelo was saving himself for the end of the fight. I think Canelo knew that no matter what, it was going to be close on the cards. And, you know, he understood what was in front of him. And in those last rounds, when he needed it most, he was able to deliver. Now, I'm going to say deliver very cautiously, because rounds 11 and 12 were competitive rounds. It's not like he dominated Golovkin in the 11th and 12th round. Those were very competitive rounds, and the 10th, they were all competitive rounds. Now I give Canelo the edge on two out of three of those, for sure. But those were competitive rounds. So this narrative, now that Canelo's figured him out and that he's going to come out in the second round and fight like he did in the last quarter of that fight, I think is lazy analysis, because you have to understand why he did that. I mean, it's not like he came into the first fight and said, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, be very passive and I'm going to bring it on in the last three. I think he, in the first couple rounds, which they call the feel out rounds, he realized what he was up against and knew he was going to have to save himself for the end of that fight. Now, if the narrative that everyone's putting out there is comes to fruition, you're telling me that he's going to come in this second fight and do that every round? Or do that 7 rounds out of 12? I can't see it, man. I can't see Canelo fighting like that for the majority of the fight in the second fight and not getting knocked out or stopped. I can't see it. And that's not a knock on Canelo, man. I mean, Golovkin's a different animal. And as long as his skills didn't deteriorate immensely between September and May of 2018, and he's still the same formidable opponent he was in September of 2017, I can't see Canelo fighting that way. I truly, truly think it's going to be more of the same. It's going to be exciting, because now I think you have a Golovkin that realizes he's up against it. He realizes that the judges are going to do him no favors. Now Sean always likes to say that sometimes judges make up for the first fight in the second fight. And by all means, I understand that thinking. I do. But not when it comes to Canelo. I just can't see it happening when it comes to Canelo. I can't. So I think you're going to see Golovkin step on the gas a little more. Look, Golovkin took Canelo's biggest shot. If Golden Boy and Loeffler and the marketing team don't throw that in the promo at least four times, the shot that he hit Golovkin with, that, I mean, the same shot that absolutely dismantled Amir Khan and James Kirkland and others. I mean, he hit Triple G as hard as Triple G could be hit, and the man didn't even flinch. He came right back at him. Right back at him. So it's hard for me. It's hard for me to think that Canelo's going to come in and stand in the pocket with Golovkin in the middle of the ring like he did more in the latter rounds of the first fight and be successful and not get stopped. If he does it, oh my gosh, I will drop the podcast, whether it's Fight Heads or Mind of Mel Pico, whatever the case is, and completely give him all the props in the world, because that would be the climax of his career so far, by far. I just can't see that happening. Now, I can't say that I don't see Canelo winning the fight. That's a possibility. You know, he has opportunities there. But I think the overwhelming favorite has to be Golovkin, unless, like I said, in this, what is that? It'll be end up being 8 months. And in that 8 months, you know, Golovkin just completely ages. You know what I'm saying? Unless he left it all in the ring in the first fight. But I don't believe he did. I believe there's still things for him that he could have done better. Opportunities for him to capitalize on. And no one's talking about that. No one's talking about what Golovkin can do better in this fight. I mean, number one is go to the body. And one of the main reasons that most say that he didn't go to the body was because he didn't want to get countered to the head. Which, look, that's understandable. But if he watches that first fight and sees all the opportunities he had to the body and how that may have worn Canelo down and possibly stopped him late in that fight, I think he's going to be more acclimated to do that in this fight. That's just my opinion. But, you know, regardless, that's just a little snippet. You know, we're gonna be breaking this fight down right up until May 5th. Let's hope we get a halfway decent undercard for this bad boy. It's the biggest fight in boxing. It's the biggest fight in combat sports. I mean, let's just keep it real. So obviously, you know, we're going to talk more about it and possibly get some guests in to talk about it as well. But man, I just had to give my thoughts on Canelo and Triple G for sure. But we'll see. We'll see what happens, man. We will see what happens. Let's, you know, we got Superfly 2 this weekend, you know, Rung Vazai versus Strada, the main event, which I think is going to be an absolutely fantastic fight. If you are a boxing fan, if you are a fight head, you're a boxing head, whatever, you know what I'm saying? If you love the sweet science, you can't ask for, you know, a better fight at the end of February than Estrada and Rung Vazai. Because I mean, they got different styles, but they're both super exciting styles. They're going to get hit. They're going to fight. I can't wait. I think that's a fantastic fight, man. I am leaning Rung Vazai on this fight. I just think there's something special about this guy, special about his power. Estrada is very, very good, you know, very calculated, very crisp in his combinations, does not waste a lot of movement, does not waste a lot of punches. And I love that about him. He's going to be there. He's going to be right there with Rung Vazai the whole time. But to me, Rung Vazai has that X factor in that I'm not sure Estrada could really hurt him, and I know Rung Vazai can hurt Estrada. And I think that's going to be the difference in the fight this weekend. You know, we'll see how it plays out, but I'm leaning Rung Vazai right now. So I can't wait to see that, man. But we got to get Ansahas and Inoue. I know Inoue moved up in weight, man, but we got to get them in the mix too, because there's something special going on down there. And the ability to get some of those guys in the ring together, which, look, the Superfly has pretty much done a lot of that. You know, we exposed the American audience to Inoue, and also, obviously, the emergence of Rung Vazai and kind of the decline of Chocolatito Gonzalez. But, you know, we got to get in Sahas and Inoue in the mix somehow, some way, man. I really hope that comes to fruition as well. But I want to move on from boxing and get into a little NBA. Just had the All-Star break, and I had done a podcast about the Cavaliers prior to the trades they made. You know, I basically said their team is shattered. And a lot of things I said, man, came out, you know? You know, Isaiah was just bad for the team. And I really had a chance to really talk about, you know, the trades and whatnot. So my Cavs fans out there and my NBA fans, man, it was, you know, when I was in Colorado when it all happened. And you know, it was a trade deadline. I went and threw Wojnowski. I put him on alert. So every time he dropped a Woj bomb, I'd get a notification. And I remember, man, that first bomb that hit with the Lakers. Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson for Shannon Frye, first round pick, and Isaiah Thomas. And I was just so relieved, man, that they got rid of Isaiah, because I was worried they weren't going to get rid of Isaiah. You heard a lot about Isaiah being close with Dan Gilbert. Obviously, he was a huge part of the Kyrie trade. So I was just nervous that they weren't going to pull that. They weren't going to get rid of Isaiah. And he was the absolute epitome of addition by subtraction. And I honestly would have been happy with just that trade. I remember I was excited. I turned on ESPN, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm getting ready. I'm with the fam. You know, we're in Colorado. We're trying to have a good time. And I'm getting this Woj bomb. And then I get it with the second Woj bomb. And the second one, what was it? The second one was the George Hill move, where they sent Amon Shumpert and like a future second, I believe, for George Hill. And I was like, okay, you know, George Hill, that was kind of anticlimactic because I felt like that was going to happen a while ago. But I like George Hill. He's a good defender, man. Good defender, and he's competitive. And I like that, man. He's just a tough dude. He's always been a tough point guard, and I like that. I think you need that, you know, just looking down the line. But when the third deal came to fruition, man, with Rodney Hood, man, that was the icing on the cake, because to me, Rodney Hood has the ability to put himself in the conversation of being a big three player. The ability to do it. He has not done it yet. I mean, 2 years ago, he was damn near untouchable. But, you know, with the emergence of Donovan Mitchell in Utah, obviously he had to take somewhat of a back seat, you know, which Donovan Mitchell was special. I mean, that's a player that's going to be elite. I'm not saying Rodney Hood's elite, but I think he has the ability to be like a big three type of player, right? So that was the icing on the cake. Now you got LeBron James, you got Kevin Love, and you got Rodney Hood, with some young athletic pieces around you. And I understand these pieces have faults. You know, you didn't trade for four All-Stars. You know, you got four pieces that fit incredibly well with this team. And if Rodney Hood can emerge to his potential, man, you hit a home run. I mean, I think you already hit a home run, but I mean, you hit a grand slam, I'll say that, because Jordan Clarkson is the type of guy off the bench. Look, he's going to be streaky. He's going to have his game, like last night against the Wizards. He's going to have games where he's, you know, he's not putting up double digits and he's not that effective, but he's always putting pressure on you, always. And his confidence is out the roof, and I love that about him. Love that about him. Larry Nance, is such an amazing piece. His ability to play with LeBron James, it just opens up so many things. I mean, you put three shooters on the floor with LeBron and Nance, and they run that pick and roll, you're in trouble. I mean, there's not many things you can do. You know, if you double on LeBron, obviously he's hitting Nance or he's hitting the corner. And if you don't double, and he's able to get, and LeBron can either take you to the hoop and put you in the hoop, you know, or the outside help's going to converge once he tries to take you to hoop, and then you got someone wide open in the corner or on the perimeter. I mean, it's a beautiful thing when executed right because of the athleticism of Larry Nance. I mean, you have to account for that now. You know, the thing about Tristan Thompson is he's a great, he can set amazing screens, but when he rolls on you, a lot of times the weak side help can disrupt him. Because he's not a big time finisher. Larry Nance is a big time finisher, and he will put you in the basket if you're a split second late. And I think that's going to be a major difference, not to mention his versatility defensively. So, you know, you got a really, really good young piece there that fits well with the best player in the world. You know, but the kicker with me is going to be Rodney Hood, man. He can shoot. He could, you know, he can beat you off the dribble. He can do multiple things. If he's able to get comfortable, that could be very dynamic, very dynamic. So, you know, props to Kobe Altman for doing what he needed to do. I hate to see Channing Frye go, man. He's obviously the things he does in the locker room, he just lightens everybody's day, man. And obviously, you know, he's a part of that championship team. Amon Shumpert was a part of that championship team. Amon Shumpert was my wife's favorite player, man. And, you know, so I've always had some love for Amon, man. And he was a part of that team. He was a big part of that team. He had that 4-point play in game 7. Don't ever forget that. Don't ever forget that. And they won by 4 points. So think about that. Wade, you know, I never fell in love with Wade. He did some nice things. He had that veteran moxie. But if some of the things I hear are true about, you know, some of the things in the locker room there, then, you know, he had to go too. That's another addition by subtraction. And he was just old, man. And I don't think he helps you in the big scheme of things. So the deals had to be made. Jay Crowder, not from day one, man. I didn't like the fit. I liked the idea. I didn't like the fit. And that showcased itself. But that's, you know, we got a new Cavalier team. They play tonight against the Grizzlies. Very interested to see how that goes. They should be able to take care of business there. The Wizards came in, man, and they've been hot. They play different ball when John Wall's not there. Not to hate on John Wall because he's tremendous. But you could see, man, they play a little more free. You don't have those situations where John Wall's forcing the issue offensively, because John Wall's an amazing distributor, amazing in the open court, you know. But when he starts falling in love with his jumper, I think that's where the Wizards hurt themselves. You saw a team yesterday that was focused more on Bradley Beal as your centerpiece, and you saw the ball moving, and they were able to make plays. For the Cavaliers, it was obvious. They couldn't hit a shot. They had multiple shots go in and out. You know, they hit, you know, what, 2 to 3 more three-pointers, and they win that game. I mean, they were 8 for 40 or something crazy like that. But I look forward to it, man. You know, I want to see how it plays out. You know, you got a monster in Golden State in the West. It's obvious. You know, everybody's favorite to win the title. You know, but they got some issues too. And the end of the day, they got 4 All-Stars, right? But out of those 4 All-Stars, 3 can kill you offensively. The Cavaliers now are equipped to make life difficult for them on the offensive end. Defensively, they will match well with the Golden State Warriors now. Not now, that doesn't mean they're going to stop them. I don't think that's possible. But they can make things difficult. Last year, they could not make things difficult. This year, they have multiple guys they can throw at Kevin Durant. And that's the biggest thing. You don't have to really worry about Draymond. Draymond is a great distributor. You know, he's a vocal leader on that team. But you don't have to worry. I mean, he can't shoot anymore. You don't really have to worry about him offensively. Iguodala's a shell of himself, right? So they match up well. The question for me is, can they score enough to compete with Golden State? You lost one of the best score, if not the best one-on-one score in the league, an unstoppable player in Kyrie Irving. You didn't, you know, you can make all the trades you want. You're not going to get another Kyrie Irving. So now you're going to have to rely on ball movement, which has its pluses and its minuses. You know, I think quarters 1 through 3, that's going to help. But in the fourth quarter, you need a bucket. And they're tilting their entire defense towards LeBron. You know, who's that second guy? I mean, Kevin Love obviously can make shots and can make plays, but he's not Kyrie Irving. You know, that's where I said Rodney Hood is the X factor. If he can live up to his potential and live up to his abilities, he can be that player. Only time will tell. But, you know, I think they put himself in a much better position now to play against the Warriors if they're able to make it to the finals. And, you know, as for the East, man, Toronto's doing their thing, man. But when it comes down to it, you know, basketball can be really simple. Is DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry good enough to beat LeBron James and Kevin Love, let's say, 4 out of 7? And if you can look yourself in the mirror and tell yourself, yes, you believe that's true, then that's good. I can't do that. Not yet. Now they play each other 3 more times. So I'm sure at least 2 of them are going to be actually mean something. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. And Boston, I just don't think they have enough offense. Now, they got Kyrie. Kyrie could win a game or two by himself. I mean, we saw him in game 5 last year. I'm sorry, 2 years ago in the NBA Finals. You know, obviously LeBron had 41 as well, but he was just magnificent in that game, especially that third quarter. In game 7, he was amazing in the third quarter and hit the biggest shot. So we know what Kyrie can do. I just don't know if he has enough around him. So we'll see, man. We'll see. I'm going to shift my focus to my Browns real quick, man. Just before I get out of here, my thoughts. We got the combine coming next week. We got over a month for the draft, man. But, you know, we got pick 1 and 4. And the question is, which quarterback are they going to take? And which quarterback they should take? Are they going to get a veteran? Are they going to pass Saquon Barkley? Are they going to pass a Fitzpatrick? The Browns have needs, man. And I'm very enamored by Fitzpatrick. And that need is massive. You know, the thought of building, because the defense was decent last year. Not great, but they were decent. You could see that there's pieces there. You know what I'm saying? You could see Myles Garrett kind of come into his own. And you know, if healthy, he's going to be a problem in this league. You know, McCourty played well. Who's my dude from Wisconsin? The name slips my mind. But he played well this year. You know, Shelton, you know, had a decent year. So you throw Fitzpatrick on the back of that defense, and you might build, you're building something there. You're really building something that could be special. But the Browns need playmakers, man. They need playmakers. For the majority of last season, you know, they didn't have, they had the worst set of receivers in the NFL. A rookie tight end who's, what, 20 years old, 21 years old? A running back in Crowell who, you know, he's okay, man, but let's be honest, he's not a game breaker. Duke Johnson had an amazing year, but he's not a pure runner. They need to convert him to a slot receiver, most likely. They need playmakers. So the thought of a Saquon Barkley is very appetizing. Because I'm not in love with any of the quarterbacks. That's not to say they won't be good or even great. I'm just not in love with any of them. If I had my pick, I'd go Sam Darnold, and I know that Sean Heinberger has been high on Sam Darnold. And I've turned the corner on him. I don't want anything to do with Baker Mayfield. I don't want anything to do with Josh Rosen. Look, you know, yeah, I understand what Josh Rosen said were simple comments, but when you say that, it tells more about your character than any play on the field to me. I want someone who wants to do the unthinkable. You know, bring a winner to Cleveland. That's in the average football mind, that's unthinkable. That's the type of quarterback I want. I don't want someone who wants to go to the quote-unquote best situation. Is that the kind of guy you want to lead you? You want, you know, I hate to bring it up, and I'm going to continue, but I mean, what Kevin Durant did with Golden State. I mean, is that the kind of guy you want to lead your team? A guy that's going to look for the path of least resistance? The easy path to glory? Or do you want the guy that's like so confident in his abilities that he wants to shock the world? That's who I want as my quarterback. And it ain't Josh Rosen. I like Josh Allen. I like his physical skills. Been in and out on him for the past 2 years. But I think a lot of people, you know, will say that we already have someone like that on the roster in Deshaun Kizer. And I'm not giving up on Deshaun Kizer. I think Deshaun Kizer has tools to be a winner in this league. So I'm not giving up on him. I think best case scenario is you got to get a veteran. You got to get someone who has a win under his belt, somebody who's done it before. I like the idea of AJ McCarron if they're not paying him like their future quarterback. I like the idea of getting him in here, let him hold the fort down for this year, possibly next year, draft a young guy, and see what happens. But the question is going to, if they sign a veteran, which they're going to sign a veteran, I'm almost positive of that. They sign a veteran, you got picks 1 and 4. You got to believe that Rosen, Darnold, one of those two, if not both, will be gone by 4. Because you, and don't even look at the teams that are 2 and 3. You got to think of the teams that are going to move up and try to give, you know, who's ever picking at 2 and 3 the world to move up. So let's say you take Saquon Barkley number 1. It's a good chance you might not get your guy at 4. You might get one of them, but you're probably not going to get your guy. So if you take your quarterback at 1. Then you're at a point in 4 with if Barkley and Fitzpatrick are available. I don't know if they will be. If one of them is not available, it makes the choice easy. Hopefully both of them don't get taken at 2 and 3. You know what I'm saying? So that's worst case scenario there. Because in my opinion, you have to get either Barkley or Fitzpatrick no matter what. And in a part of my mind, I'm almost saying you got to get them both. Because I'm just not 100% sold on these quarterbacks. But I understand the situation as well. So, all else fails, at number 4, you have to know you're going to at least get Barkley or Fitzpatrick. And if you don't, you got to take him at 1 and take your chances, whatever quarterback at 4. I know that's not popular. I know it's not. but you got to get one of those two guys. Because in my opinion, those two guys are the best players in this draft. You know, sans, you know, the lineman at Notre Dame, whose name escapes me right now. So those are my thoughts, man. Those are my NFL thoughts, my NBA thoughts. I should say my Browns thoughts, my Cavs thoughts, and my boxing thoughts. But, yeah, I'll be jumping on once in a while to drop another Mind of Mel Pika. Appreciate the listens. Love y'all, and y'all be good.